This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisen and Noel Lim. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Monday the 3rd of May. We're back for yet another exciting week at work. How are we today?
I'm feeling good and it's so nice to be back here after a 2 weeks break.
Yes, we got to gear up for kind of go back into the grind. But it wasn't really a two-week holiday for the rest of us.
For context, we've switched over teams. So if you see the, that's what Noel means by the two-week break there.
It feels like we're on the other side of the snap.
Yeah, it does. I mean, this time last year, we switched over teams as well. And it felt like, same thing. It feels like you're saying bye to your friends and going to another country. And then you arrive there and it's like, oh, am I on the other side of a parallel universe? That's really what it feels like. Great week ahead. And I'm actually looking forward to the week after because it's a 3-day work week to look forward to.
Oh, yeah, well, you're kind of jumping the gun a little bit there, Roshan.
I am being excited.
That's next week.
Yes, it is. But, you know, you got to look forward to something.
Okay, well, but in the meantime, today actually is World Press Freedom Day. So the theme for the day today is information as a public good. So, of course, in an era where misinformation and hate speech can go viral with the click of a button, independent, professional and responsible media is the best defense. So do tune in to BFM all throughout the day as we highlight the importance of defending media freedom and space for public discourse. This morning at 7:45 a.m., we're going to be speaking with Dato' Akhiruddin Adnan, president of the National Press Club, for his take on the current state of affairs for Malaysian press freedom. And of course, as we do every Monday, we'll be having Pressing Matters later on at about 9:30, where we'll be looking at what press freedom looks like in two countries that have gained top marks in the World Press Freedom Index, Norway and Jamaica. So stay tuned for that later throughout the morning. But a little bit closer to home, what are we going to be talking about later after 6:30, Noel?
Yeah, so there will be international news and we're looking at India's elections, some interesting developments for Modi, as well as COVID, of course. Australians could face jail or fines if they return from India. How interesting. And of course, I think some sports news ahead, and I think Roshan's going to take us through that.
Wow, thanks for pigeonholing me there, Noel. Yes, but there was just some developments over the United-Liverpool game, some protests that happened there. We'll get into some of that news over there.
Also, listen, it's not because you're the only guy on the team right now. It is because you are the football fan.
You don't know that. You do,
since
actually.
Since the guy in the Arsenal jacket,
I can confirm that being the third person in this room.
Yes, there is a three person.
In case you didn't notice.
Sorry, a bit of silliness this morning. But a little bit closer, we'll be taking a look at third places. And this is a word that was made famous by Starbucks many years ago in terms of that space between work and home. And that was the cafe once upon a time. But what is the third space in this COVID-19 era?
Good question. And if you want to let us know, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Do let us know what you think. But up next, we're going to be asking the question of multitasking. Are you for or against it? Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was I Never by Rilo Kiley. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. So the first subject that we are tackling this morning is multitasking, which I think over the course of the past few years has gotten a bit of a bad rap, because a lot of scientists have come out to say that, you know, rather than actually focusing on multiple things at once, your brain is in fact jumping between, let's say, the two activities that you're doing at a very quick rate, which can sometimes reduce the accuracy or the efficacy of whatever it is that you're actually doing. So you think you're doing a good job of doing two things at once, you know, saving time and all that, but you may not be doing as good a job as you could if you were focusing solely on that one activity. But illustrated in this BBC Work Life article that I have in front of me, a new study from the University of North Carolina's Keenan Flagler Business School has come out to say that maybe multitasking can actually fuel our subsequent creativity. So it's a kind of a spillover effect of the energy and excitement of that hectic feeling, you know, when you're multitasking like five different things.
Yeah, I'm no expert, but speaking from experience in lots of procrastination and multitasking and all of that jazz, I can see how this would apply to, I guess, busy work. You know, if you're moving between very low cognitive impact activities, right? If you're jumping from thing to thing, and then that the gaps in between jumping from one process to another could give you a little bit of that gap to spark some creativity. But more often than not, I feel, and of course, you know, the various studies all over the place, that jumping from one to one, there's a switching cost, right? And essentially, you're never allowing yourself to compound the effects of that brainstorming session you're doing or anything like that. Now, not all activities need your 100% commitment. If you're watching TV, you could very well be knitting or doing something else at the same time, right? It's about the cognitive. Yes, actually, very much so. I was lost for words for a second, but. It's essentially what's the cognitive load, right? Like we most of us multitask all the time. We drive to work listening to the radio or podcast or whatever. That is multitasking in effect. But how much do you remember of the podcast? Is it active learning, active recall? These are the different elements to it, right? What is the, of the 100% RAM that you have in your mind, how much are you allocating to this and how much stays with you thereafter?
The conventional view is that multitasking does cause cognitive overload because you're switching from one task to another quite rapidly. But it seems like it does work for some people, and maybe sometimes, according to this study, when actually I think what happens when multitasking puts you in a flow or in some sort of zone, right, where you feel very energized and you feel very alert because, you know, you're multitasking, you're very engaged. So hence, I think you get some of these benefits of creativity and feeling very purposeful, perhaps. And I think this multitasking gives you a sense of busyness, right? It makes you feel like maybe you're important and you're having a purpose in life. And that could very well be the results of multitasking. So maybe it's not multitasking per se, but it's the kind of zone that it puts you in.
And it's intensity as well, right? Because when you're multitasking, you're building that momentum. And I personally felt this jumping from an email to writing questions to moving about all these different things. And you're keeping, it's a different kind of flow. It's an activity intensity flow, which can make you feel very productive. And sometimes in between those switches, again, like there's a, you know, like a writing an email here and writing a question there, they somehow have an M&A and you come up with some new idea.
There's a synergy somewhere that we're not seeing. But yeah, no, I think as the serial multitasker in the room right now.
What?
No.
Why would I think that? I do think that there is definitely a sweet spot. So I see multitasking as there are different kinds, right? So on the one hand, there is, yes, you know, watching TV and knitting, for example, or listening to a podcast and driving to work. Usually it's because you do that because one of those activities is completely mechanical, right? You know, if you're listening to the podcast and you're very interested in it, really, how much of your drive to work do you remember? But then you drive to work every day. You can take the twists and turns by muscle memory almost. Same with knitting or doodling or whatever physical task you do while you watch TV, perhaps, if you're one of those people like me who focuses better with a task at hand. But when it comes to, say, multitasking at work, if within the space of an hour I have five different things that I have going on, I do think there is kind of a sweet spot you can hit before it crosses over into overload. Because there is a point where, you know, personally, it feels like almost like my brain is expanding to fill all of the different tasks that I need to do, whether it's printing this, you know, writing questions, this, that, the other. But I can do it for a short span of time. It's like a sprint, right? You do it for maybe an hour and then I have to decompress. If I had to do that the entire workday, I would probably just, you know, refuse to come to work the next day because it is very tiring as well. And after a while, that return that you get on that energy and that spillover effect, that starts to decrease the more exhausted you get.
Yeah. I think the reality is, I think in workplaces, sometimes you do need to multitask because it seems like all deadlines are urgent. But if you ask me on a personal level, I'd rather do one thing at a time.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe what has been portrayed before this is that multitasking is evil, but it's not, right? It's just like everything else, there's balance in all of it. And there's one line here. that a lot of the studies before this focus on the immediate consequences of multitasking. So what's the long-term implication? Your ability to multitask between different things, it can be a skill, right? And maybe it develops your ability to cross-connect different ideas and different tasks together. Just don't lean one to one side or the other, right? In the spirit of May the 4th tomorrow, don't lean too much into the light and don't lean too much into the dark side. Find balance in between both.
The grey.
The grey side.
Well, let us know what you think about this. Are you for or against multitasking? You can WhatsApp us at 01878988899 or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages coming up and then we're going to be talking about third spaces or third places in a time of COVID. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Under Pressure by Queen and David Bowie. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanison and Noel Lim. Now, I think all of us have been under some form of pressure over this past year, what with lockdowns, intermittent as they have been. And even for those of us who were going to work and have returned to work since, a lot of us still aren't socializing as we had done before COVID-19. You know, everyone, I think, thinks twice or should be thinking twice now before you drop off into your local coffee shop, you know, to get a cup of coffee, because we still need to maintain SOPs even as the vaccination rollout continues. But this other article in the BBC Work Life talks about that, you know, the way that over this past year, people have lost their third places, right? So their places outside of the home and the office, that space in between where they socialize and they meet friends. And whether or not that's really hurting us in the long term. What do you guys think about this? You know, where were your third places before the pandemic hit?
I think for me, it's the library, Tamantun Library, because it's really quiet and the chairs are really comfortable. The table is great to work at. So, you know, this third place for me is like, you know, you just get out of your home, right, for a while, you know, a different scenery. And it's also the replacement of an office, because office, sometimes you get interrupted a lot. Whereas in the third place, I hardly see someone I usually know. So it's a good place for me, I think, for deep work, for concentration as well. This article points out. But you know, now with the COVID, right, there are a lot of few things have happened. One, the library is closed. The third place is closed for a period of time. Or if it's open, there may be some limitation in how much time you can be there. And I've seen some cafes have this sign that says you cannot work here now, or there's a limit of 30 minutes. I think simply they just need to get customers moving. And so you are always in this constant vigilant state of mind, because you're wondering, okay, is this person sitting too close to me? You know, or why is this person talking so loudly? You know, so there's always that sense of, you know, being on your guard. So I guess a third place is not what it used to be. And now with the possibility of a MCO 3.0 or some variation of it, we might start to see again our third places being encroached on, some restrictions again.
Yeah, it has changed, right? The dynamic in terms of the third place being whatever it is, whether you're going out for a meal or whether you're going to do work in a library, cafes, whatever, all those different places you used to go that were not the house or the office represented a place for you to decompress, but also for incidental things to happen, right? Things that, oh, you meet someone new, or you strike up a conversation with the barista or the person at the restaurant, or you eavesdrop on people's conversations. You know, all the lovely fun stuff.
People watching,
which is also a thing, right? I used to love going to a cafe to have all that background ambiance, kind of just make you feel like you're connected, but also not having to socially engage at the same time. That has changed. Instead, what we're seeing is people are buying things back to their houses. Maybe people come over, but you're now compressing the second and third space back into the first space, which is the home. And whether we can go back to a time where even when things do come back to normal, will they ever be, quote, normal, right? Things will be slightly different.
Do you know what I realized reading this article? It's that, yes, my typical third places have kind of fallen by the wayside. I don't go to them as often as I have, as I used to. Now my most frequent third place is my car, because I'll swing through a drive-through, say a coffee drive-through, pick up food and a drink. And because I don't want to go into the cafe and contend with crowds, I will park in the drive-through parking lot and have my meal there.
That's very interesting, especially with the rise of drive-throughs over the last year. Starbucks has sold a lot, has somewhat compensated, I mean, not entirely, but they're seeing bigger ticket purchases through drive-throughs.
Yes.
That's very interesting. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit sad, let's be honest, because I feel like a right, you know, so-and-so.
Do you communicate by honing at each other? Like other car people in
their
cars?
I face the wall of the car, of the parking lot as I eat. It's not the most stimulating environment ever, but...
Like that.
Yeah, but I think you raise an interesting point. I think this is how third places may start to be modified, right? So in your place, you have transitioned into a car and like what you say, drive-throughs. But you know, maybe co-working spaces will be more affordable for people to have that as their third place, a temporary spot. It doesn't have to require a long-term contract, for example. Or condos, condominiums, apartments may be repurposed for people to work from home, but not not exactly at home, but just outside their home, enough time for them just run in to do whatever they need to do. And it's a clear indication something is going to happen. Like even in Singapore, offices, major employers like DBS Bank, for example, they have indicated they're going to be cutting space. And they are quite a major tenant, right, in Singapore. So it's quite interesting to see these developments.
Yeah, or the other third space that you could be finding is that, you know, I find that people are more comfortable in each other's houses. So maybe a friend's house becomes that third space. Historically, my house has always been that third space for my friends, right? So instead of going out, we buy tea and come back to the house, the curry puffs. And I supposedly, I'm supposed to make tea all the time, apparently. But you know the buying of the food to take to a third location or a fourth location, that could be how things change.
So let us know how your third spaces have evolved during this COVID-19 pandemic. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or you can tweet us. The handle is at BFM Radio. We're heading into the 6:30 news bulletin now though, and then the international news for you. But to take you there is Fleetwood Mac with Everywhere, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Scar Tissue by Red Hot Chili Peppers. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Russian Kanison and Noel Lim. Now, before we get into some international stories, we've had some social media responses this morning.
Yeah, people seem to like the topic of multitasking, Lynn, because we've got Shamil here who's tweeted us on, Twitter. I can multitask superbly. However, when it gets too much, I take a mental note of everything and walk away to watch Netflix while my brain processes all the things I need to do. Then I start doing it all. And I kind of relate to this as well. There's a certain level of just filling your brain with things and then going in front of the television, but not really watching TV. It's just there while you're actually processing all the things in the background. I used to do this a lot when I was studying as well. Study for an hour, watch 20 minutes of Modern Family, but not actually watch what's going on. But what I really enjoyed from Twitter today was from Ari, who WhatsApped in because I said, finding the balance between multitasking and focus. That's the balance of the force, right? And in spirit of May the 4th tomorrow, which is Star Wars Day.
You're a day early, but you know, never mind.
Hey, I think I'm hyping it up, right? she sent over a picture of the different codes of the Sith, the Grey, and the Jedi. And it's quite a good one, but you can check it out on Twitter. But essentially, the Grey code, which is the balance, it's that the Force, that there is only the Force. There's no light or grey, light or dark side. So quite entertaining, but essentially balance, right? That's what we all kind of strive for in our own lives.
And here's one he pointed out to Noel, that now you won't have the privacy at that third place of yours because you've talked about it. People know where to find you now.
Well, first they need to know how I look like right now.
Yeah, that's kind of the benefit of radio. But then, you know, there's always podcast pictures.
That's right, yeah. But not for the past 1 year.
Why are you giving people ideas?
Now they know where to find you in your car.
You're helping.
Well, they don't know my car number plate, but okay.
Why are we identifying different ways?
I have no idea. Okay, well, now we are. Let's turn our attention back to some important international stories that caught our eye this morning. Now, over in India, a lot of the attention has been on the rising COVID cases in that country, and you know, they're not abating. They reported a new record high, more than 400,000 new cases in a 24-hour period. And against this backdrop, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi's party, the BJP, they have failed to win a key state in the recent elections. So the BJP was targeting the state of West Bengal heavily during campaigning, but it was comfortably held by its incumbent, who is a fierce Modi critic by the name of Mamata Banerjee. And so the party held power in Assam but failed to make major gains elsewhere. And West Bengal was certainly contentious because Narendra Modi did also come under a lot of criticism for holding massive campaigns in West Bengal, even though COVID cases were already on the rise.
Yeah, so I think this state is, I think Modi or BJP has never ruled this state before, right? I think it has a sizable Muslim population. But certainly, I think one thing that people are really looking out for Mr. Modi's his performance would be whether he will be punished by voters for his handling of the COVID-19 crisis. When you just look at the numbers, right, 400,000 new cases in a day and close to 4,000 people have died in a day. So it's really heartbreaking to read the kind of news that's coming out from India right now when, you know, they are so short of medical resources as well as beds.
Or even if you just have friends in India, right, and you hear their own stories of their and their personal experiences, it really does feel a little bit like a war zone over there. And, you know, I've heard stories from family friends who talk about, you know, every day there's like someone, basically body bags being taken out of their places. It's really quite horrible. I know my sister's friend, who they both work together in Geneva, her family, one grandmother passed away, grandfather's got COVID. You know, it's really just an ugly situation down there. And it continues to be the case. And in fact, if you take a look, there are international repercussions for this because Australian citizens returning home from India could face up to 5 years in jails and fines after the government made the journey temporarily illegal. The Health Ministry over there said the ruling has been made based on the proportion of people in quarantine who have acquired a COVID-19 infection in India. And earlier last week, Australia banned all flights from India. There are an estimated 9,000 Australians in India, 600 of whom are classed as vulnerable.
So this is the first time that Australians will have been criminalised for returning to their country, according to Australian media. And some doctors have criticised the move, calling it disproportionate to the threat posed by those who might be returning from India and, of course, who carry the risk of bringing the virus to the country as well. So from Monday to today, anyone who's been in India within 14 days of their intended arrival date in Australia will be banned from entering the country. So this just underscores the severity of the situation there. And, you know, countries across the world have sent a flood of emergency medical supplies to India. As of Thursday, 40 nations had sent shipments. But whether or not it's going to be enough and in time is, I think, the question.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a very difficult decision to make for any government, right? At one point, you want to be humane and allow some families to come to Australia to be able to seek treatment, but they have to consider the integrity of the public health and quarantine system as a whole. Ben, looking over in the UK, Manchester United's game with Liverpool at the Old Trafford was postponed after a planned peaceful protest outside the stadium. I think fans got really angry, and I think really it's all this energy that's being channeled towards the Glazers, right? The club owners, who are not very popular.
Yeah, they've not been popular since their leverage takeover of the club back in 2005. But it's all come out even stronger now because of the European Super League and its collapse, right? Essentially showing once again the Americanization of the English Premier League and all these American owners who want to essentially guarantee their spots in the commercial viability of their entities and all of that jazz. But yeah, the fans have never been a fan of the Glazers and continue to show. If anything, this has just sparked their disdain of the current ownership. And some of them are asking about 50 plus one fan ownership, which is something we see in Germany. So I don't think this will go anywhere, but it is interesting to see how it develops.
And we're going to be turning our attention to what's happening on our own local papers and portals next after these messages. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was The Jam with Town Called Malice. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. So we are looking at the front pages of our local papers and portals this morning. And the Star in front of me has their headline, Break the Chain Now. So this is as Malaysians have to brace for the potential of AMCO 3.0 in targeted areas in a few states, according to some medical experts. But, you know, the picture on this front page, which I think is something that a lot of us might be familiar with over the course of this weekend, is the registration for the AstraZeneca vaccine, the voluntary registration, which opened yesterday at 12 noon. And I think all of us went and participated in that crush attempting to register and get a date for a vaccine, didn't we?
Yeah, certainly so. Quite exciting Sunday afternoon.
It felt like booking concert tickets.
Yeah, my friend said, we should do this every 2-3 weeks, right? Just give us some excitement while we have to stay at home. The AstraZeneca slots were booked within 3 to 4 hours. And, you know, the NST spoke to a few people about why they wanted to get the vaccine. I think some people say it's just peace of mind, right? No, you work in a restaurant or you go out for press conferences or you need to be out there doing your work. It just gives you that peace of mind. And especially so when the government is saying now that the utilization rates of our critical care beds, ICU for COVID-19 treatment has already reached 90%. And certainly, that should, be a sign of caution for us.
Yeah, and I've got the Malaysian Reserve in front of me, and it's going with German firms in Malaysia burdened by vague SOPs. But I guess this is just one angle, right? Because they spoke to the Malaysian German Chamber of Commerce and Industry CEO Daniel Birnbach, who obviously gave the German experience. But this is, I guess, something that we're seeing in general, because vague SOPs just make it difficult to know what you can and what you can't do, and a lack of clarity can be quite burdensome.
Yes, and there is also a little a statement here from the Johor Sultan Ibrahim on page 2 of the Star, which is, I think, valid for all of us to take into consideration. Follow SOPs even after vaccination, because we talk about vaccines sometimes as if it's going to be the solution to all our problems, but it's not. In a lot of cases, the vaccine isn't going to totally prevent you from catching COVID-19. It just means that symptoms will perhaps be less severe, and there is a reduced likelihood of you passing the virus on to your immediate contacts if you do catch it after vaccination.
Probabilities, right? You're adding another layer. Again, Swiss cheese model, guys. it's just another layer of cheese with holes in it, but nothing is 100%, but you're creating more of a hurdle. So if you continue with your masks and your distancing and your following of the SOPs, then you put in the vaccine layer there, it's just lowering the probability of catching the virus, but also the impacts of it to your health and also the ability to transmit it. So it's just another part in cutting off, breaking the chain, the long-term chain anyway.
And certainly that's really important. I think the Malaysian government has also identified that the Indian double mutant variant has been detected. I think one case has come in, and this particular variant is feared to be the contributing factor to a drastic increase in COVID-19 cases in India, and certainly something we have to watch out for. The Health Ministry has also detected 27 more cases of the South African COVID-19 variant. The fight is certainly not over, even with a vaccination.
I've got a bit of news here as well. Apparently, Minister in the Prime Minister's Department for Law, Dato' Sri Taqiyuddin Hassan, has said that the government has given an assurance that Undi 18 will be implemented this year. This sounds like a story we've heard before, but hey, we've still got 7 months left for the year to see this come to reality. He said that the EC, the Election Commission, is looking into several matters before finalising it and expects it to be implemented this July. Thus enabling Malaysians aged 18 to vote in the 15th general election. July was always that slated date that we heard about, that has been talked about since it was first voted in. But there was some doubt casted on this earlier this year. So we'll see how this plays out. It's also something to keep in mind and keep an eye on.
Certainly. I think a lot of people looking forward to that only 18, the ability for 18-year-olds to vote, have been disappointed, I think, with the rhetoric that we've seen over the past couple of months. Because people have come out to say that it sounds like excuses that have been given in order to postpone Undi 18. But the proof of the pudding is going to be in the eating when 18-year-olds are officially, of course, given the right to vote. Will be the day to celebrate.
We also saw some state party elections yesterday from DAP in Johor, where Johor DAP chief Liu Chin Tong retained his position at the state party elections. We saw his team winning 10 of 15 committee seats and sweeping the leadership portfolios. Some of the names that you may recognize here include Yeo Bi-yin, Teo Ni Ching, and Lim Guan-ing as well, those who were elected Johor DAP committee members as part of the ongoing DAP elections that we're seeing.
And that is all of the news that we have for you from the local papers and portals this morning. But we're going to be bringing you more business news and analysis after the 7 o'clock news bulletin, which is coming up next. But first, some music. Get Back by Doris Troy, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.